I want to be respectful of everybody's time, so to go ahead and call the meeting to order. I'd like to welcome everybody to the first meeting of the Benton Franklin Behavioral Health Advisory Committee. So thank you, everybody, all the members who are able to be here today and all the members of the public who came. So that's very nice to see a big turnout. So thank you, everybody, for coming. First thing I'd like to do is go around the table and introduce all of ourselves, the members. So please say your name, which agency you're representing. And then if you're sitting in for somebody, maybe let everybody know so they know who the regular member will be. So we'll start down there with Mr. Harris.
Good afternoon, Mike Harris. I'm the fire chief of Franklin County 3 in Pasco, and I'm sitting in for Bob Gear from the city of Pasco.
Good afternoon, Chad Michael, fire chief for the city of Kennewick, and I'm representative for fire and EMS from Benton County.
Good afternoon. My name is Jason Bliss, and I'm the executive director for the Washington Alliance of Quality Recovery Residences. I'm sitting in for myself.
I'm Jim Raymond, the Franklin County Sheriff and the law enforcement representative for the Franklin County.
I'm Tom Crossgreen, representing the Benton County side of the Benton County Sheriff.
My name's Kyle Sullivan. I'm the human services manager for both Benton and Franklin County.
I'm Matt Rasmussen. I'm the deputy county administrator for Benton County. I'm representing Benton County.
Good afternoon. I'm Keith Johnson, the county administrator in Franklin County.
My name is Becky Gross. I'm a registered nurse, and I'm the SUD. I bring the SUD expertise to the table, and I'm representing Franklin County.
I'm Cindy Saunders. I'm the co-director and compliance officer for Greater Columbia Behavioral Health ASO, and I'm representing Benton County.
I'm Shelby Bearsling. I'm representing Columbia Basin Veterans Center and Benton County Veteran Therapeutic Clerk.
My name is Joel Chavez, and I work for Community Health Fund of Washington, CHPW, and I am the SUD representing Benton County.
My name is Brian Ace, and I'm the at-large member or public representative for Benton County.
BJ Olson, and I am the mental health provider that represents Franklin County.
Kelly Harnish. I'm with Benton Franklin Health District, and I'm here on behalf of Carla Prax.
Angie Manarola. I'm at-large. I think that's the title for Franklin County.
Michelle Gerber. I'm president of the Benton Franklin Recovery Coalition.
And Trevor Hummel just talked off the East Coast.
Come on down, Trevor.
Trevor, maybe you could introduce yourself.
Trevor Hummel, and I'm on the Franklin County side.
Okay, great. Thank you, everybody. So the next item we had was approval of the agenda. We didn't send that out. One thing I noticed is with all the members of the public who came, no one has an objection. Maybe we move the public comment portion up to before the discussion items, so that way some of the members of the public have to go somewhere else for another appointment. They had an opportunity to speak. Does anybody have an objection to moving that upward? Okay, I don't see any. So I think next we'll go ahead and do the public comment section. So please keep your comments to 3 minutes or so, and just come and let the committee know what you'd like to say. Would anybody want to speak to the committee before we get started on the discussion? So then the first discussion item we have on the agenda is draft bylaws. And so this is one of the items that we really need to get addressed, and they'll be showing or dictating how the committee operates from here forward as far as voting officers and those sorts of things. And so I sent out a draft of the bylaws that we had prepared, got some comments back, and added those into the proposed draft. And so we'd like to have some discussion from the voting and non-voting members of the committee to see, is there any other items that we'd like to address in the bylaws going forward? And if not, then perhaps we can look at getting something approved and work on setting up the operational status of the committee. So anybody have any comments, questions, or concerns on the draft that's sent out? So everybody is comfortable with the revised version that included those track changes as far as how those go?
Quick question on one, I apologize. So on the section, bear with me here. So section five or section six as it relates to alternates. Just some clarity on the alternate piece. If both alternates are attending, that's one vote.
Right.
Do they both still participate fully in the meeting? That was not clear from the minutes that I read down. And then a follow up question on that is one alternate selected for each individual, or can that alternate change based on meeting and schedule availability?
It's ultimately up to the committee on how that goes. It would be nice to have as much consistency as possible. I mean, that's just my opinion. I ultimately don't get a vote, so. But I guess to your first question, yeah, it's not clear. So I guess, is there any thought from the committee as how the alternates would participate? I mean, it does say one vote, but the alternates participate or don't. I think you're asking if an alternate and the member are attending.
Both present, yeah.
Do both participate in the conversation? So that's the, does anybody have a preference one way or the other, I guess?
I think having a letting them speak is allowed.
Does anybody have any concerns with that position? So I think we'll clarify that.
And can we also clarify whether the intention is one alternate per individual, or is that something that's fluid that changes per meeting? My preference would be to have that consistency.
Okay. Anybody have any objection to that? Is that you would pick your alternate and that would be it? Obviously, if that person couldn't be your alternate anymore, you'd have to change them. But the hope would be is that it's not a different person every meeting. It's consistently the member or the alternate. Is that everyone's preference?
I haven't got a problem with that. I mean, my alternate's Ken Roski. Yes, if we both fell off the face of the earth, you might have. It does. Makes sense.
Okay. I think you guys probably strive to have one of you be here. Given your profession, that would change. Totally get
it. Could change.
That's true. So maybe we put in the language that we will strive to have the same alternate, but given certain circumstances, it's acceptable to send someone else. Brian, are you comfortable with that?
Are alternates approved? I'm trying to remember. No, they're not. Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. I just, the intention is the important one to me of just having that consistency so there's not new people every time.
Right.
Okay. I guess I have a question too about that as we select their alternates. If the representatives from Benton County, the alternate needs to also be from Benton County.
Yeah, okay. And preferably within the same expertise. So. And specifically,
says that. Okay.
Yeah. I will add those changes. Okay. All righty. Well, since we got to make some changes, I don't know that we're quite ready to vote on approving the bylaws unless people want to give Keith or I some latitude to come up with language for that. How do you guys want to approach that?
I move to give you the latitude so we can get the bylaws in place so we can get going.
Okay.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. We will come up with some language and get that out hopefully early next week.
Thank you guys for putting work into that.
Well, I'm happy to do it. So then with that, in the bylaws, it did talk about how we would pick the 17th voting member. So your committee is ultimately going to have to review candidates from the persons with lived experience category. So my initial thought was we have a bunch of candidates who submitted originally through the request process. So maybe we ought to pick from take that list rather than going out for a new process. And then somehow we need to narrow that down because I think that list is going to be about 20 people long. Does the committee want to narrow that down as a whole, or do you want to maybe assign, pick a couple of work members to have a working group to come back with a top two or three, and then the committee would pick from those, vote from those? Or does someone else have a different idea of how they'd like to see that go?
I think for the sake of time, for the individuals that have already taken the initiative and applied, we should just look at those 20 or so applications, and then I just perhaps pick a couple people to narrow that down and bring them back to the committee.
Okay. Anybody have objection to that? And then if everybody's agreeable to that, do we have some volunteers? I'd say at least three people would want to be on that. Matters if they're voting or non-voting members. It's really just a recommendation, so that we have some volunteers to whittle those names. I'm happy to pull together the list and send that to whoever is going to pick those people, and then bring them back at the next meeting to appoint that person. Does anybody want to volunteer to be a part of that working group?
I'm happy to be part of that too.
Cindy and Rebecca, okay. Anybody else?
I'll go to if you think we need three people.
It might be good to have at least three so you don't end up with a tie there.
Yep.
Okay. There is comfortable with three people, or do we want more than three people?
I recommend take it to five.
Take it to five?
Yep.
I'll kind of objection to that. So
I'll fit.
You get Carla to do that?
Yeah, we'll divvy it up together.
Okay. All right. So we have Cindy, Becca, Carla, Dr. Crosby. One more.
And these like applications are, they're the ones that are already in?
Yeah. So
okay. I'll move it.
And Jenny. Yeah. So yeah, I will, we've got them all individually printed with PDFs. So I'll send them an email to everybody, and then you can discuss amongst yourselves. And then I'd say come back with a list of top three. Are you okay with top three? So recommend your top three, and then committee next meeting will vote on those from those three people to pick one more member to have for 17 voting member. All righty, sounds great. So the next item we had on the agenda was discussion on the maybe we should step back here. If we now have the bylaws in place, subject to a few changes, couple of things that would be good to decide on is regular meetings. And I know maybe we don't need to decide today, but it is something that we should put into the bylaws. Does anybody have a strong preference on when the meeting should occur? We picked this day just because it was hard to get everybody together, but if we're going to set regular meetings, maybe Friday afternoons isn't the best for everybody. But I could send out a poll if that's the preference, and we can kind of get a choice of when do we want to have these. I know a lot of people have regular standing meetings, and trying to have that discussion among 24 people might be challenging, but be thinking about when you want to have your regular set meetings, the day and the time that looks best for you, and keep your eye and send out a poll here and try to get that decided, and we'll plug that into the final copy of the bylaw. And then also, did we want to go ahead and pick officers today, or do we want to hold that for the next meeting and be a little more prepared for that? It's really up to the will of the group.
Is everybody present?
We were missing, I believe, the hospital representative for Franklin County and the hospital representative for Bend County. So perhaps we should wait till the next
meeting. Is anyone on Zoom right now?
No, we had Erica from the hospital side. She was on vacation. She said she was going to try to log in, so we set it up for her, but she unfortunately hasn't been able to do that. So,
well, here would be my suggestion. Being that you have no CEO for Trios and no CEO for Our Lady of Lourdes, that we see how that's going to work out first. And then I don't think Aaron Hetty's here. Oh, you are here?
Okay.
You should be up here. Just my thoughts.
No, that's fair. I think because we got to nominate three people and it would be good to have them there. So we'll plan on doing the officer selection at the next regular meeting. That sounds great. Unless anybody has a strong opinion otherwise. Okay. So the next item that we had on the agenda to discuss was a request for proposal for recovery center and mobile crisis team provider. So I don't know how long ago it was, three or four months ago, maybe 5 months ago, we had a small group of law enforcement and fire officials who had started working on the idea of getting mobile crisis teams going in Benton and Franklin counties. And then we started also looking at the same time for setting up the CRC. And it made sense to try to go ahead and hire the provider now that would ultimately run the CRC to help us in setting up these programs and designing the facility. So that has been added to the draft RFP, which I'm happy to send out to everybody to have them review it. So that's where we currently are. We have a draft RFP that we want to send out to have providers who do crisis services, detox services, and mobile crisis teams send us back proposals on how they would structure, set up those programs, and then ultimately hire one of them to come in and help with the design and setup of the CRC and the other services within the counties. And I've seen that happen in, right now, one example is the city of Lakewood. They're doing that. And from what they've told me, I've spoken to their project manager over there, and he said having the provider be a part of that team has been immensely helpful. So I really think that that's a good way to go. And so I just wanted to, one, tell people where we were with the RFP process. And then if there's anything specific that any member of this committee wants to make sure is addressed in that, we'll get plenty of opportunity, because the way I've at least preliminarily structured it is that those providers are going to come and make a presentation to this committee. So we'll have opportunities to ask a lot of questions, make sure that they understand what our goals and needs are in the community. And then those can be articulated in a contract that's ultimately signed with the provider. So we don't necessarily have to have every single detail outlined in the RFP process, but we'll want to be thinking about those things and having an idea of what exactly types of services we want in our community to make sure that that ends up in the final contract with whatever provider is ultimately selected. But if anybody does want something very specific added to the RFP, I'd love to have some advice and help. This is a new area to me, so. And I'm happy to send it out to everybody to take a look at and get some comments back before it goes out the door.
I just want to have one comment. We recently have been given allocated money from the Healthcare Authority to set up a youth mobile crisis team in Benton and Franklin County. Sure. So that's going to be starting soon. And just so that everyone keeps that in mind as you're developing another crisis team, that you wouldn't want to duplicate services for our community. But it hasn't started yet. We're just contracting that out right now.
And just for this one, we had not addressed any youth services in this, because at least it's my understanding, those are very different ball games. And we may ultimately end up with the same provider, but I think we would want to have those be under separate contracts and totally separated as far as whatever youth services we ultimately decide to provide. So, and there's going to be probably multiple contracts that go out so that we don't put all of our eggs in one basket with the provider. We want to have ability to make sure that if one of them goes down, we don't want to lose every service we have. I wouldn't want to see that happen. So we have that's great information to have and know. And so I know there's been a lot of talk around having a CLIP facility be part of the services that we offer in the counties. And so I think that would be probably another contract that we'd be looking at sending out an RFP for and getting going. And so.
So then from listening to you, the recommendation that, if I'm listening to you correctly, is that we put out an RFP to figure out for somebody to traffic all these different problems, the put in some sort of a bid on a contract to, for the lack of better words, a manager to manage all this?
No, I think we're trying to get a service provider to come in, and I've got a comprehensive or Lords or an RI or whoever that ultimately is to be a part of the team. So not necessarily Trav managing the project, but just being, sitting on the design team who, you know, they can, they know the type, what they need in their facility to operate it properly. But I think ultimately who's going to be driving the ship is this committee, at least as far as making recommendations. Is what services we want. We're not really asking the provider to tell us what services we need. That's the purpose of this group. And so we're going to tell them what services we need, and they're going to say, okay, you need that service, you want that service, we need to have this type of facility to provide that. And I think that's going to be very helpful, because I mean, so that does that answer your question, Chair?
Yeah, so you need to find someone that's an expert in the field to kind of help navigate.
Absolutely.
Falls.
Yeah.
Well, however you want to put that, I move that you do that.
Okay. So I think probably I'll, if everybody wants, I'll send out the RFP on Monday, which is what I have so far. If you have any specific comments, I'd love to have that and have everybody review. I don't know that we need to have a formal approval to send out the RFP, because we'll get lots of opportunities to see and vote on what's coming back to us from those proposals. So, but I do want the committee to have an opportunity to see it before it hits the street.
Can we also put a deadline date on, you're going to send it out Monday, you're going to say by Monday,
I'll give a deadline date. The current draft is probably 15 pages, so maybe we get people a week or so. I know people are busy to look at it, so maybe if I send it Monday, say have it back on following Monday. And then we'll go through our process to send around.
Then ultimately, before the RFP is approved, it'll be with you two going, yeah, this is good to go. We're not going to have any problems.
Yeah, Keith and I'll review it, make sure everything's good. We'll go through our legal team's review and make sure everything's structured there as well. So yeah, we'll go through that formal process.
Matt, what is your guys' timeline for releasing that RFP?
We have a week of review. We'll probably have another week and a half to 2 weeks of legal review. And then it takes 2 weeks to get through the formal council approval to issue it. So I'd say end of August, we could be having that out on the street. It may be first week of September, but that would be my goal, is that last week of August. And I did have one question here. So when we started this conversation back when it was just the law enforcement and fire groups, we had discussed instituting the mobile crisis teams early, even though there wasn't a CRC, recognizing that there's going to be some people who, when the team contacts them, they are not going to be able to stabilize them in the field, and they're kind of stuck taking them to a hospital or the jail, which is essentially what the options are now. Would the group have any preference on whether or not we start the mobile teams as soon as possible, or do we wait until the CRC's up and running?
Are you talking about multiple providers for this crisis response teams and for the recovery center, or all inclusive in the one RFP?
I was thinking it would be all inclusive, because from the discussions that I've had, it really makes sense to have the CRC provider do the mobile teams, because they can use their staff to make sure that there's enough responders available. So at slower times, they bring some of the staff back in and they cover shifts in the facility. And in heavier times, they can have additional people on the street to manage those teams. And so that's the recommended model that I've seen, but that doesn't mean that's what we have to do.
I say if we have a mobile crisis team with prescribers on board, there's a lot of things that can be managed outpatient, and I say don't wait.
I think the other thing that's important to keep in mind is that most mobile crisis teams have DCRs, designated crisis responders, and those staff have to be on teams that have crisis contracts with the healthcare authority. And so if Benton and Franklin counties put together a mobile crisis team, they're not going to be able to have DCRs on them. So they can still have mental health professionals and mental health counselors that can call DCRs, and they can do a lot of work still. But I think that's just something to keep in mind, is that the team is going to be built without that.
Right. Well, because that comprehensive is the current, right?
Comprehensive is the current contract holder for that.
It's not possible to contract multiple providers to do that?
No, it has to be a contract with the healthcare authority.
So there'd have to be some coordination between
Right.
comprehensive and whatever provider got Right. picked for the, it wasn't comprehensive.
Right.
Coordinate for those DCR services. So.
Correct. But also keep in mind that probably 80% of crisis contacts don't really require a DCR. So there's still a great need for crisis teams and crisis outreach that wouldn't necessarily require a DCR to be involved.
Cindy, out of curiosity, for the providers in the state of Washington that are already providing crisis services, perhaps over on the west side, if one of them was to file a response for the RFP, could they in theory set up shop over here because they already have a contract with HCA to do the DCR service, could they come here and replicate that?
No, not for DCR services, because the DCR service is delegated to the ASO in each region, and the designated crisis responders have to be in that region. So like our designated crisis responders cannot go to any other counties outside of Greater Columbia region and designate people or detain people. They have to be in our region.
So my question is if you put these teams together, I'm a simple guy thinking like a cop, but when you catch them, where are you taking them to Cleveland?
I think our thought was when we first had the conversation is you're going to be able to stabilize some of these people, or 70 to 80% of them, without having to take them anywhere. Yeah, and if we don't, then we're kind of left with the options we have now, at least until the CRC gets open. So that's the point, is we want to accept that it's not going to be a perfect program until the CRC opens, but it's still potentially helping a high percentage of people and having to keep those contacts out of law enforcement and EMS.
I just don't think it'll keep law enforcement and EMS out of play,
at least without the CRC.
Well, no, I think if you have a mobile crisis team, the first people they're going to call is the police for help. Right? And so the police are going to come and they're going to be in play. And ultimately what happens is the same vicious cycle that takes place right now. They end up in my jail. I can give you all kinds of stories, just some that are going on right now. And it's like, so why did we get down this road? And I'm not saying that it's not fun. I just think that somewhere along the line, in the interim, if it's Greater Columbia Bay Area Mental Health, or if it's Yakima Comprehensive, or whoever, somewhere we need to be able to take these people to get them out of the police hands or out of our jail, et cetera, et cetera, and try to figure out some short-term restored system that, till we get through this process, get everything worked out, that we're at least making a little bit of a difference. And I don't know what it takes to do that. I just know it needs to be done, and it needs to be done pretty ricky-tick, because we're now to a homicide here in Richland this week that has all kinds of little evil things attached to it. I've got a lady sitting in my jail that's down under 80 pounds right now. That's been on a hunger strike. I'm not quite sure what she's doing, but she's went from my jail to Yakima Comprehensive down in Yakima to assaulting them into the Yakima County Jail, and now it's back in my jail on her deathbed. And somehow we've got to stop that, since in the short term and the long term. And how do we fix that? I don't really care who is it, does it. We just need to fix it, and we need to start figuring out how to get those things done. Probably pretty rigid day. That's what I'm trying to say. So if these mobile teams that you're talking about will help relieve that on the street corners of all of our communities, then let's get them going.
Yeah.
And let's give them an edict that they're going to adjust as needed for the community, what we need to take those problems off streets and get where we can restore them in some form or fashion. And then all the service providers need to drop their guard, and let's figure out how we do this, short term, long term, and move on, and let's get going. Because as we're kicking this can around, people are dying.
Yeah.
People are killing their mamas.
Yep.
And we got to figure out ways to reach them earlier before we get to that, what I refer to with felony jersey barrier.
Yeah, so we, I don't think we should let perfect get in the way of doing something. That's my opinion, and I think that we can make good progress if we go to where the patients are and stop waiting for them to come to us, so, I mean, that's.
Perhaps what we can do is, we can put out the RFP, we can leave the language in there to say who'd like to start those as soon as possible. And then we can, and I'm happy to start working on that, is trying to gather together some of the providers currently in the community, see if we can get some consensus of, we need places to take people when these teams contact them. See if we can, as much headway as we can get, it's a temporary solution.
Right.
And it's, so I'm happy to start having those conversations, and Kyle can maybe help me do that, that's a good point, Sheriff. I think that is the goal, is to get any of these people off the street, out of trouble, before they end up in our jail.
And Matt, the other, I think, systemic issue that we really need to think about when we're thinking about which to implement first is the workforce shortage. It is a huge issue, and every single agency in our region is understaffed. And they're offering bonuses, they're offering retention packages, and it's not working. And so, like, just off the top of my mind right now, if you put out an RFP for a mobile crisis team, RI might be the only one who responds to that. They might be the only one who has staff that they could get. So just keep that in mind, is right now our community is saturated and there are no MHPs available. So I don't know how long that problem's gonna go on or consist, but every one of our providers right now is short-staffed trying to hire. So we've offered contracts to providers locally, and they've said, no, we can't do it. And it's fully funded programs that they're saying no to.
We might have to offer relocation.
As
maybe get outside this local community and start.
I could put in the RFP to have them give us a plan on what do they need to get people to come here. If they say, if we need relocation expense, I think some of these are eligible costs for the programs we're trying to stand up. And obviously, if we can't have a program, we don't have people, so we're going to have to pay what it takes to get people here.
The benefit is, I think that the money that Benton Franklin has is obviously more than the state offers for salaries, and so that you do have a benefit there.
So I think if there no one, I'll add some language to that, to have them not only provide us a staffing plan, but provide us a recruitment and retention plan.
Good idea.
So we know who can look at those and evaluate, because they have the greatest ideas in the world, but if they can't bring the people to the table, it's not going to happen. So that's something we ought to consider, is how do you plan to bring in people and keep them?
Yeah, that's going to be a must. You know, being here and working in the SUD community for as long as I have, and with some of our providers that are sitting here in the audience today, it's very real. Coming up with SUDPs, the trainers, the ones, the experienced are the ones fresh out of college. It's very real, and the providers are struggling just to keep enough people on staff to provide the current services they do. And if we bring in a new provider, yeah, it's going to have to be a must. We're going to have to talk about relocation, where that staff's going to come from, because we don't. Last thing in the world we want to do is harm our current providers that we have here trying to provide good service.
Yeah. We want to start stealing their staff, and their services go down. We're trying to get more services. Great point. I'll add some language to get that in there, and that's something we can pick. Making decisions.
Can we add, can we find a way to whatever facility we end up with to open it in stages and open part of it very soon and, you know, module wise, so that we don't have to wait for the whole thing to be ready?
I think, and the answer is probably yeah. I think that's where having that provider help us with that and say, you know, hey, you can open this, and I think we can structure our construction contracts to phase it like that, or to use it. I don't know enough about how those need to open and interact to tell you which one should we open first, but somebody who operates needs to probably give us a good plan on build this first, this second, this third, and then we can structure our construction contract to accommodate that. Because, yeah, there is no reason to wait if you don't have to for both.
The thing I recommend is there's studies that have already been done on most of these topics and that you provide them to everybody so that everybody has an understanding some of those complex issues you're going to talk about, because some of that's already been done. And I have them, send them out to people. Really dull reads, but reading them, a lot of that work's been done.
So coming back to some of the sheriff said, I think one of the things that would be important would be a memorandum of understanding with Comprehensive Health, that whatever team is put together, that they're going to work in cooperation with those crisis teams. So the last thing we want to do is a crisis team that's sitting there with somebody that doesn't want to do anything, then not able to do something, you know, like, so then they're the ones babysitting them as opposed to someone else. And so that they're going to be responsive to that. You know, like we've done the assessment as a team and we've determined that this person needs help, but we can't detain them and they're not willing to, you know, to voluntarily engage with the services, so.
Okay, and that's, I think we can reach out to Comprehensive and at least have an initial conversation. Obviously, MOA would want to.
Sure, absolutely.
But make sure that they're willing to do such a thing and have some discussions on how that might look and then put that into the RFP as well as it would be expected to an MOA for those services. Okay.
I think that's a valid point. And also, just so you know, there are contractual requirements that they have to respond to all car requests for a DCR within a certain amount of time. So they can't say no.
Sure.
Not going to, but I do agree that that's a valid point.
Yeah. Practically, though, you can be stuck in a place for an uncomfortable amount of time. So.
Yeah, definitely.
No, that's a great point. Well, I'll make sure that's addressed in there and I'll reach out to Comprehensive and at least let them know that that's something we're looking for as we start to stand up some of these other services. Anybody else have other comments? So I'll make some changes to what I have based on conference I've received today. I'll send that out for review. There's a few things there, so I'll try to get it out by the end of the day Monday because I've got to make some changes on this. So we'll get it. Anybody wants to add or change anything, that'd be great. And then we'll get it ready to go on the street. So we've pretty much covered other than other business. Did we want, I don't know if anybody now here in some of the discussion that's gone on, if anybody has something from the audience, do you have something you want to comment? We could do another public comment session here. And if anybody wants to come up and comment on the topics that the committee's discussed, happy to have you do that. Sir.
This is a very practical thing. I'm not familiar with all the acronyms. My wife's involved in a board of sorts that they actually have to pay for fees. So it's impossible. It'd be nice for those of us who are just in the public trying to understand what's happening here.
All right, point taken. Do our best. Anyone else want to talk?
Sir, I was going to. Yeah, my name is Clark Cable. I've been in the crisis for about 40 years, been in community behavioral for about 30. Speaking as a private citizen, just with the benefit of the community and the folks here, I just want to live for you all to look at the system as a whole. And I'm not trying to be dismissive of the problems in the jail, because people with mental illness do end up in jail. Some of them need to be there, some of them absolutely don't need to be there. But being involved in the crisis system for about 25 years, the vast majority of people we see don't end up in jail, aren't involved in the judicial system. And so if you're looking at a system of care, you gotta look at the complete system of care. And I just want to remind people, because, you know, I've spent, again, the last 30 years trying to destigmatize mental health. And if I was Joe General Public here, I would walk away from this meeting and think that everybody with a substance use disorder or mental disorder are killing people or committing crimes, when the reality is the vast majority are. So I think we should have to break the balance.
Sure.
I know there's a lot of communities that are much larger than the Tri-Cities, major cities set out. They have volunteered that are in the recovery world, that it's, you know, kind of critical for them to get back, and they can relate to that. Maybe it could be a solution as far as, for sure, you know, we don't have enough people. There's, and we want to get something started as soon as we can. Maybe, at a volunteer type of, just a grassroots, people that have a passion, ability, you know, around that, but, you know, we've got a lot of people in this community that care, so they're tying into this, you know, bubble crisis state, a community type of, presence out there, whether it's handing out water, meal exchange, whatever the heck it is, right? Or, you know, just, I'd be here for somebody to talk to, mental health problems, you know, and hand out information. We've got a whole community here that should consider all of his and that level.
I just want to add to the staffing, because I work here at Lord's Counseling Center, where we are also very short-staffed. So staffing is just extremely important, because when you're understaffed, the staff is stressed out, and it leads to a lack of compassion. And this population needs compassionate care in this community severely. I mean, I just can't stress that enough. You know, all technicalities aside about what everybody has talked about today, I just really want to ask, like, how do we make sure the care that comes out of this facility stays compassionate? You know, I want to hear talk about that. So,
can I ask a question here related to that? Is staffing an issue on the west side as much as it is here? And is it a national problem, or is it more regional?
I would say it's a national problem. I can only speak to what I'm experiencing at my facility here. But I'm in a lot of support groups online, and healthcare shortage is extremely, it's a difficult topic everywhere right now.
Yeah, and the reason I ask that is, as a county administrator, I see it across the county in a number of different professions. We can't find planners or engineers. We're struggling with 911 operators.
Yeah.
Just a number of different areas where staffing shortages are a continual challenge for managers across the board.
Yeah, and if we continue on with this without staff, I mean, but what are we going to do, you know? And it's just it's a big thing. I just wanted to make sure I stress that.
So I'd like to add comment on that. That's why we're here.
Yeah, definitely.
To take care of people, because we have compassion for the community.
I think that's a big part of this group that also will be done. This group's going to be monitoring these contracts after they're let, making sure that those providers are providing the services that they said they were going to do in the way that our community wants. And this group's going to be regularly meeting with those providers, having reports given to them, and making recommendations to the boards and county commissioners on whether or not those providers should continue to provide the services based on their performance. So that's a big part of why this committee is what's formed.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for that comment. We represented a construction manager for several of the civil commitment mental health facilities at the Healthcare Authority of Building in Clark County, up in Snohomish County, and a few other places in the state. And one thing they're doing, because they're looking for providers, is they're doing the RFI process before the RFP process. They've actually developed these really good handbooks of like the right passionate type of care that needs to happen in order for, you know, to do a good job. And so as opposed to saying, hey, providers, give us your best care program, is giving some guidelines based on, you know, the vast experience that healthcare authority and other agencies need. That's it. Yeah, so if anybody needs that information, I have their RLI packet that they're giving to provide as part of the RLI.
Well, I'm retired from Hanford, and when Hanford bids, they bid contracts all the time, and a staffing plan is part of, always part of it, and it's how many will you bring, and it's ratios. How many of this per this? And they have to have that in their bid, and they have to deliver those people. They have to move there.
The staffing plan is currently, and I don't have a piece about how they're going to use their recruitment and retention, which I didn't hear, and I think that is actually very important.
My name is Judy Cox. I'm up here. I've also a question around the profile. How long, or have you decided how long stay in service for that? And if the part is, will that provider have a pull-up for him? Or will it be recommended?
Yeah, I don't, I haven't, those are not decisions that I made, and I think that's, I'd like some input from the group here is, I think we kind of briefly talked about that the provider would operate the CRC and the teams together, and that there probably would be multiple providers for different services. As far as the timeline, I personally think that we want to at least have the opportunity to have a provider be established and stay long term. We still have the ability that if we're not satisfied with the services, that we could drop that. But I don't think we want to be going out re-soliciting services every 2 years or something like that. It's, we want a relationship with the provider and the provider to have a relationship with the community. That's my opinion. I'd love to hear what everybody else has to think.
Well, and I also think that it's going to depend on the credentialing organizations, the HCA and the DOH, Department of Health and the Healthcare Authority, and also the payers, the MCOs, what kind of relationship they have with these providers and the services they're providing, because they have to keep credentialing on a regular basis and pass audits and all that. So I think it's going to depend not only on this committee or the community, but also all the players that are involved.
One thing I just want to ask about is the kind of further upstream component of helping slow the tide a little bit. Our current needs assessment that we've been working on showed that about a third of our youth in this community are verbally abused, humiliated in their homes. And that obviously is going to lead to some big issues as they grow up. And, you know, so I'm just curious if this work can expand into some prevention as well as obviously the needed recovery treatments and the response to crisis.
Right. I think that's also, like I said, that's part of the committee wants to continue those discussions and say that's a service that we as the committee feel should be done in this community. Then the committee should make a recommendation to the commissioners to say this is a service we think you should go and solicit for. So I think that's the purpose of the meeting of this group is what other services are important and how to get there. So I think that's a great thing to bring up and make sure that everybody understands. But that's the kind of thing that we're looking for from this group is what other things help out,
right,
relieving pressure wherever it can come in.
Yeah.
That's the goal. So
I think that's one area where it might be difficult to choose a provider when we're not exactly sure what services we want them to provide yet. And, you know, there's a lot of providers that do specialty work. And so I think that might be a challenge as well.
So my name is Trinity Roscoe, and I have a couple concerns here. I know I've spoken with Sheriff Raymond, and I think we're on the same page as far as what we need to help individuals who are suffering from mental illness. I work with these people on a daily basis, and we're in a situation where I think that in addition to recovery center, we also need some mental health supports in Franklin County. We do have those services and veteran support in Benton County, but we don't have them in Franklin County. And although Mr. Gordon Cable pointed out that there are a lot of people who do need our help I think that the people that we need to help more at this point are the people who are in custody, who are struggling to get services, access to services, struggling to have support systems from their families, struggling with their substance abuse disorder. We need to address the co-occurring disorder, because when an individual is arrested and he's incarcerated or she's incarcerated, we're not only looking at whether they have mental health issues, but we're also looking at whether they're detoxing or they're unable to have family support when they're released, and obviously they go back to the street at that point. So I'm highly supportive of the recovery services program, but I also want to make it clear that we do need the mental health programs in the courts as well, because those people do need assistance. Right now, Eastern State Hospital is 3 years backlogged on an outpatient evaluation. So if you come into my court and just report right now, and you have mental health issues, but you don't need to stay in custody, which is fantastic, you're gonna wait 3 years before Eastern can see you and tell you whether or not you're competent or not. And that's a very low level that they have to determine, but 3 years. In custody right now, we're looking at over 2-3 weeks. It's not, that's legal. They're having to dismiss charges because of that issue. So Mr. Raymond's having to keep these people safe, and yet we're not even able to get them the help that they need. So I want to make it clear that we do want to make sure that there is a mental health court component here in addition to the recovery center. And there are a lot of funds available. There's actually free money, free grants out there, willing to provide us training, willing to get up startup costs, but we'll need some of the support from this program, from the amount, from the monies that are received, in order to keep it going once we get it established.
Thank you everyone for your time. Is there anybody else who wants to comment?
Hi, my name is Andrea and I work for substance use disorder. My concern is insurance. Like, we can give them all the help in the world, but a provider or an agency isn't going to allow them in without insurance. The sliding field scales alone will bankrupt somebody. Treatment will bankrupt somebody. So my question is, do you guys have a fund for uninsured people when this facility opens up? How is that going to work for people with substance use or mental health? Like, what is the community going to do for those that are uninsured?
That's a question that the commissioners probably need to answer as part of funding, but I know our board, Benton County side, discussed making sure that some of the revenue that comes in is available to pay for those people so that people aren't turned away. So they don't have insurance.
That's the purpose of the 0.1% tax.
Yeah.
It's already in some places it's already implemented. For example, Franklin County just brought in their first quarter, and it sits right at $235,000 for 3 months on the sales tax. Benton County is starting, I think, July 1st. So you got July, August, September. By the end of October, you'll know roughly what it's going to come in on that 1/10 itself, that 1/10. And those monies are designated for, just like you were talking about, how you get it, the services to people that can't afford it or don't have the insurance, because that should not be the barrier, if you will, to getting people help and to try to restore them, to get them healthy, for them to be able to come back and be participating members in the community. So we'll see, but there's all kinds of money, to be quite honest with you, out there to address your issue. And everybody's just got to put their heads together and work, and it'll happen.
So there's another population that's not being addressed, and that is the Spanish-speaking only population with substance use. You guys are talking about providers, but what we lack the most is Spanish speaking. There's not a treatment facility in the state that's Spanish speaking only. And finding a bilingual substance use disorder professional is almost impossible. And part of the reason, and I know you guys don't have anything to do with this, but this is some food for thought, is the income that substance use disorder professionals make. We're not getting paid to deal with the things that we need to deal with. And a lot of people are turning away from substance use because of the income. So I know this has nothing to do, but it's just something to ponder on. Thank you. It's not just mental health here. There's substance use. And what came first? Are people self-medicating with substance use or were they mental health first?
Actually, I'm really glad you brought that up because in our specific region, you talk about statewide, there isn't any facility that's Spanish speaking. But in our specific region right now, if a Spanish speaking member wants substance use treatment, they can do an intake with a translator, but then that's it. They can't, there's no groups that are provided with a Spanish speaking. Interpreters and translators won't do groups and case management services. So you're right, that is a huge gap in our own community and in the state.
I wonder, sorry.
Just in addition, for the non-Medicaid or insured population, I think that's a really good opportunity for this recovery center to partner with the ASO in some form, because we do get substance use block grant for individuals who are non-Medicaid, non-insured of any sort, or who are not American Indian, Alaska Native, and they have zero payment at all. And so we have those funds, and a lot of times we can't use them all, and we have to give them back to the state because most people have insurance. And so that, again, is just an area where, as Sheriff Raymond said, we need to put our heads together and know which resources each community member has or each agency has and get those things covered.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
You know, I know you'd mentioned the RFP, maybe adding a piece around recruitment and retention. And I wonder if that's a great piece to add of what is a plan for recruitment and retention of bilingual, yes, bicultural staff.
Yeah.
And how to financially incentivize that. Mm-hmm.
My name is Patricia Messina, and I am a clinical supervisor for the Kennewick Office of Merit Resource Services and also a person in long-term recovery. And most recently, I'm a parent with kids that are using. And this has become a big issue. So I wanted to share some light. We have a lot of positive people here that want solutions. And what I know is that we have an internship program that's starting in the state, and they are going to be doing SUD and peer support, and they are also doing some psychology internships. We, Merit, is going to be doing training for, we have, I think, allotted two in Kennewick and two in Pasco for seeking interns to actually start in September. So there is a light at the end of that tunnel. And we also have fully Hispanic or Spanish speaking services at both of our offices. So, and I know that there are other offices in SUV that have those services. So, you know, there is hope, and hopefully, you know, coming together and being a part of this committee, that we would be able to find further solutions.
Are your services just outpatient, right?
Yes, okay. We are currently just outpatient, but as she said, we can, I mean, I've worked with many bilingual, well, mostly monolingual people to get them into inpatient services, and there are funds at available to send somebody if they don't have any treatment. And I have even had some, I remember working with Roche in the Orchard one time, and they paid for one of their clients to go, and he had very limited English, but they then, the provider that they sent him to actually did contact some of the, at that time it was 5 years ago, but contacted some of the language line to help with some of that stuff, and then they had staff that was partly bilingual. But I mean, that's like on a rare occasion where the heavens open up and everything should,
yeah,
so, you know, and so for that person, they got treatment, but that doesn't happen.
I just like to, I agree with the discussion about the bilingual staff shortage. It's a huge issue around the state. I know that there are some outpatient providers here in the Tri-Cities and the Greater Columbia region that do provide some intensive outpatient services, but there are no inpatient treatment. I believe there's one CMAR, I don't know if they still are, or Tacoma, but that's about it. But I think the other issue is with recruitment and retention is, talking to the higher education institutions about creating SUD programs locally. Right now, somebody who needs to go to a SUDP course, they have to go to the west side or have to do it online. And a lot of individuals that are English speaking don't have the ability to do that. Also helping to pay for those services, it's very difficult, and that's what keeps people from going into the field, I would say.
Well, I agree with
the talk, the education that we see in CBC, you know, I know we have the workforce development council here, and maybe this is a project we need to approach them about and say, hey, how do you, you know, I'm not sure what they do, but I just in their name, you know, I think that they would be an ally in helping solve some of. I know it's a statewide, a national problem. We need to worry about our cities, Benton Franklin County.
Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe even developing a subgroup that wants to kind of tackle that and work with the workforce, like Dan Ferguson is who I'm thinking of, who's done a lot of work with the Accountable Communities of Health, Dan. He would be somebody that I would probably reach out to and just have a conversation about, you know, what's being done in this area, and could we have like a subgroup that just starts talking about it now?
Working groups is something that is a great part of the committee. You can get a handful of people who want to tackle and that. I think that's a great idea.
Heritage University just started the CDP, it's graduated with bachelor's. Even if it's bachelor's in social work or your CDP. Columbia Basin, we used to operate. They did start that back up again to get people into it. But I do know that they just started this right after I graduated, so.
Anybody else have a public comment?
I want to just say that I've been looking at some of the providers and like the boots on the ground people. A lot of the jobs, to reiterate the cost, and I know it all, a lot of it comes down to money, but a lot of the jobs are requiring a bachelor's degree, yet start out at minimum wage. And when my high school graduate can get a $20 out an hour job easily, right, makes it hard for people to retain people.
That's exactly right.
Okay, well, the next item I had on the agenda was just other business. So it's an opportunity, if there's anything else any member of the committee wants to bring up for further discussion, there's the opportunity to do that. So does anybody have any? We've got a lot of topics here today, so I'm going to guess a lot of those have already come up through our conversation, but if anybody else has anything else they want to add, that would be great. Not?
I would be, with the recent change in leadership within the Lord structure, I would be curious to know if anything has changed or if they will take a different stance on their only allowing people to stay for 3 days within the new recovery center. But I suppose that would have to be a conversation perhaps for the next meeting when their new CEO is here.
Just to clarify that, are you talking about the crisis bed or are you talking about inpatient?
So there were, we kind of had to shift again, going from providing all services at one facility to possibly providing them at two, because there were some Lord's had issue with individuals staying for more than 3 days.
Oh, I see what you're saying. For the new crisis.
Yeah,
I think the discussion on that, we talked a little bit before this meeting, they're protecting their contract for inpatient hospitalization for long-term inpatient for adults.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we tried to challenge that, they would throw up some roadblocks in terms of establishing beds, probably what they would end up doing, which would make this process drawn out a lot longer.
The last thing in the world I want to do is, I guess, throw a wrench in it or try and drag this process out. And to be honest, at the end of the day, for me personally, it doesn't really matter to me whether it's Lord's, whether it's just a new provider or a new recovery center. We've got to find a way to be able to provide the services for them. And ultimately, if we could do it under one roof rather than two, I think it would be a heck of a lot better for our community as a whole.
Yeah, I think there's a difference though between crisis bed services and long-term inpatient. And I think that's the distinction. Like once you, what days, is it 3 days, is it 5 days? How do you draw the line between long-term inpatient? And I think they want to protect that as a service that they're providing. Yeah. At least that's my understanding.
Well, and I think the frustrating part of that is I think 3 days are
inside of the Chamois.
Sure.
So I think, you know, part of what this facility should help do is again, you know, in every one of the psych hospitals in the state doesn't make them whether versus detained or voluntary, they can refuse admission. And so what we want to avoid are situations where we've got somebody that maybe they're so sick, they're behaviorally aggressive, they're challenged. And I worked in crisis for many years, a lot of those with Gordon, and it's real frustrating when you have a DCR sitting in the ER at 2 o'clock in the morning, and the little psych unit has 8 clients, but they're capped because of census or because of acuity or whatever the standard excuse is, which is the excuse that hospitals throughout the state use. And so you end up having to put a hold on that person in a medical facility. And I'll be honest with you, I don't even know. I think Cadillac is the only one that still does that.
Single bed.
So if you're at, I don't, and I'm not sure what they do when somebody's in Trios or Lourdes and there isn't a bed. And so, and I've, during my time at crisis, the problem that we ran into also is, in which I think the goal would be not to, to house a person who was ill in the crisis. You know, if they needed longer term inpatient treatment, the goal would be to transfer them. But I know I used to have to travel to all the different hospitals with a judge, with a court clerk, with a prosecuting attorney, defense attorney, and hold hearings because 3 days was not enough time to find a bed. And in some cases, I went back after the 14-day hold hearings again because we still couldn't find anybody. So the hope is that this facility, we don't want that with a random arbitrary 3 days have to discharge somebody that's not stable and we still don't have a place to put them. That's going to have a defeated purpose of what we're trying to accomplish with this facility. So I think that was what the frustrating thing, I think, with the 3 day plan was.
And I think I agree with you. I think we're kind of locked into that though now, because that's the agreement that the Benton County has gone into in terms of purchasing that facility. So I think I hear what you're saying and I agree with you. I do also think that, and we're dealing with ultimately we're dealing with a company that is not local anyway. I have a feeling that they would, if I had to guess, defend the beds that they already have. Most hospitals would do that just out of, you know, market share and whatnot. It just financially makes sense. So I would guess that they would do that if we pushed it.
I think you'd be right. Just we spent months negotiating just the sale agreement. And they actually started out on the other side of you can only have so many beds. Got them to back off on that and say you could have the beds that you could get licensed for. That's when the 3 day thing came in. So I think you're spot on. Jason had brought up that we want to ask the question again. I think time is of the essence because we're moving through the purchase and sale agreement on the facility. I don't know that I'd want to wait till we have to bring this group together. If the group thinks that we should at least ask the question, we can pose the question and say, are you willing to change that stance? And the answer can be no. And I don't know that they'd go backwards and say, and they might say, well, yes, but we'll only limit you to that. Means, okay, well, we'll stick with what we have. That's ultimately why the county decided that it needed to find another facility for the crisis center, is because we did not want to be subject to that 3 day limitation, because we knew where we're going to have people who have a 14 or 90 day hold and we don't want to discharge them. But we thought, you know, there's a lot of great services that could still be provided at the KGH facility. There's any kind of youth service, residential detox, any kind of outpatient services can all be based out of there. And for the price per square foot that they sold us that building for, we could never build that amount of square footage for anywhere near that. So it still made it great. It's a good purchase for the services that are needed in the community. We're talking about doing housing there, which is desperately needed. You know, people get released from these longer term facilities and they have nowhere to go. And then they just end up right back in the system. So that's why we ultimately said, we're going to accept the 3-day limitation, but we're going to have to find another place to provide some of these services that could be impacted negatively because of it. And so I'm not unwilling to have it. If we want to, I think it's an easy thing for me to reach out to LifePoint again and say, with the change in leadership, is there any interest in changing that? And in the negotiations, when we spoke they ultimately pushed us to their attorney, and we spoke through their attorney. They did indicate a willingness that if they stopped providing certain services, that they'd be willing to come back and renegotiate that restriction. And so, I don't know. I think it's worth asking. Sure. My opinion is, I think it's at least worth asking the question, because I don't think anyone disagrees that ideally all the services would be under one roof. It's just, we didn't want to get stuck with something where we have to arbitrarily move people from a facility because we don't have a better place to send them.
So
I think there's a clarification on the 3-day poll, because when I spoke with Joni Mike Wagner, he said it only affects less than 4% of the people who go on the recovery center and does not affect anybody with substance abuse.
I think the concern is and again, I used to do this work, I used to do crisis work. And so, I don't know where the 4% number came from, but even if it's one person who is imminently dangerous to themselves or somebody else that's needing longer treatment than 3 days. Like I said, when I did crisis work, it happened all the time where we couldn't find places for people. And again, I used to, the last year the county's operated the crisis unit, we had we contained 350 people that year. Over half of them started out in a single district, started out detained to a hospital medical facility because we couldn't find a psych facility in the state that would take them.
And so, I think there should be clarification, because if the words are saying it only affects less than 4% of the people, 3-day poll does not apply to anybody with substance abuse. I think there's some questions.
I just have one comment about that. Is last week ward census was 8, and all 8 of those staff were detained. So that's 100% of those 8 staff that would affect, because you can't detain somebody for 3 days or less.
I think what he's saying, and I was at the meeting where I think they're bringing this question, is it the stipulation that LifePoint put in place that it's just primary mental health, no SUD at all? If somebody has primary mental health and they need to be detained longer than 3 days, then they have to go somewhere else. Is this correct?
How are they making that?
So what percent? Well, I know that's hard to diagnose. Yeah, it's not usually very clear.
Because you're detaining based on symptomology and their actions, not on their diagnosis.
It is just mental health. It does not apply to the SUD. But part of something else that has to be remembered is the goal of the crisis center was a no wrong door facility. We don't want to we have to combine the SUD and the mental health in the same building, because when a law enforcement officer drops a person off, we want to accept them no matter what. We don't want to have to diagnose them while the officer waits and says, sorry, their mental health, you got to take them somewhere else.
Oh, I can't keep them
here. And so I think the 4% number, based on what I've seen, is inaccurate. I get that, yes, we could do all the SUD, and I think we are going to do some SUD services at the KDH facility. We talked about the residential detox facility being there, because there isn't restriction, and we could just operate that there. But we've talked about putting the secure withdrawal management services with the crisis center, just because we want that no wrong door. So if we have to detain involuntarily, those two services need to be together so that we're not having to transport somebody involuntarily to another facility.
So is all of this work that you've done already and come to all these conclusions written down somewhere? Where can I read how you've come to this? Because I've been a little out of the loop.
Matt, does some of the state funding come with language around no wrong door? And because I know that from being at the legislature and talking to those people, that no wrong door is basically all they're willing to fund these days.
Right. So yeah, the money that we've received in funding, we wrote the proposal saying that that was the type of facility that we were going to operate. And so they gave us the funding based on that. And because now we are looking at having to have that no wrong door somewhere besides the KGH, which was the original, okay, I'm now having to go back and spend a bunch of time fixing all the paperwork and working with the state to make sure that they're comfortable with the services being provided at a different facility and potentially being at, because we had told them we want a no wrong door facility and residential detox. Well, now the no wrong door facility is going to be at another location. Residential detox will probably be at KGH facility just because of the space. And so, I can put together some summary. I don't know that we have a comprehensive document that explains all of that. It's just a lot of discussions internally and how this needs to lay out, how we can get the services into the community, given the restrictions that we have to work around.
So a question on the, so the no wrong door facility, that is essentially a crisis bed,
right?
And would be licensed that way.
Be crisis state, there'd be a crisis. We have funding for a crisis stabilization unit and some care withdrawal management.
Okay. So would you then see that being a long-term inpatient, psychiatric inpatient? Like, are we looking to compete with that?
No.
So the threat, I think, is to LifePoint is that we would do that.
And we specifically told them we have no interest in competing in long-term situations. Sure.
So the three day thing that they came up with, at least my understanding, is to protect themselves from us going down that road, right? Is there another way that we can assure LifePoint that we have no intention of creating a psychiatric inpatient to compete with their?
Yeah, I think we had had hopes to sit down and have conversations with them. I know that Matt, myself, I think Commissioner Delvin had reached out and requested a sit down so we could talk through some of those things.
Sure.
And it never happened.
What is the definition of long-term inpatient? What's the day?
Well, I think the definition would probably be more of like 90 or 100, yeah. Being able to set 90 or 180 day dependence.
So we're going between 3 days and 90 days?
Yeah, and so there's legal holds. The initial hold, when a DCR evaluates someone, determines that they're imminently dangerous, it's for 120 hours. And that's for evaluation of treatment. If the treatment team feels like there is, at the end of that 120 hours, that they're still not stable and they're not an appropriate assignment for the voluntary client, then they can petition the court for up to 14 more days. At the end of that 14 days, if they're still not stable, the next legal hold would be to petition the court for 90 days, and then everything after that on an inpatient, or even if there was an outpatient order to participate in treatment, is 180 days.
So I just want to clarify, they don't, to do the 14-day hold from 3 days, 3 to 5 days, you don't have to have a diagnosis, right? You just petition them.
No, they would have it.
They would have a diagnosis.
The petition would go for additional time. They would still need to be dangerous, imminently dangerous to harm themselves, somebody else.
Okay, but I guess they wouldn't have to have an SUD or a behavioral health diagnosis at that point.
Somebody is detained based on their behavior, not their diagnosis. But after they're detained, they're in the hospital, they're evaluated, so they're given a diagnosis. And part of the problem is a lot of times when somebody is involved in a substance use, either withdrawal or high or something, they present as mentally ill. They present as psychotic or delusional. And so it's very difficult to make that diagnosis in that immediate instance. So. But again, as Kyle's saying, for them to be on a 14-day or even to a 90-day, it's not based on their diagnosis, it's based on their presentation.
Okay. I was trying to, the 4%, so.
Yeah.
I think what she was, I was in that meeting as well, and I think she was trying to present the most positive light for LifePoint, why they were making a stand there. I do think it's probably more than 4%, actually. I think that's probably very low. I was surprised when she said that.
I would support asking again, because I think it matters who made the decision for the 3 day. Was that a local decision or was that a LifePoint?
We heard from you, because as we got into those, we only spoke to the attorney. They would not meet with us
directly. And so the attorney just said it's coming from his management team. And so I think it's worth making the ask again. It's changed, the position may be different.
So Matt, so if they came back, if LifePoint came back and said, no, we're going to keep with the 3 days, is the plan to start working on the two facilities? Once you acquire the other facility that you mentioned about crisis stabilization or detox services, and then start remodeling both of them at the same time, or start just working on the crisis stabilization service and for right now? And if so, why couldn't that one be for substance use as well? Yeah, it's big enough to provide all those services and then leave the hospital for a second phase.
I don't know that the facility that we're leasing is big enough to do the residential detox component, big enough to do the crisis stabilization and the secure withdrawal management. But I don't know that it can house the residential detox there as well. And so I think the initial thought was, is we would be good doing both, if not simultaneously, pretty close, one right after the other. Because recognizing that we want to have the four things that we, or the three things we told the state we were going to do is crisis stabilization, a secure withdrawal management services, and a residential detox. And so we have to provide those services based on the funding that they've given us.
I'm just concerned that because of the workforce shortage that we've been talking about, that it's going to, the number of providers that are going to be willing to come and provide the services is going to dwindle down quite a bit, since they're going to be at two locations, service is going to be at two locations, versus if they were just at one, you have staff that could be cross-trained to provide multiple services.
We haven't, I mean, we've been talking with a landlord on the second facility, but we're still looking at, you know, if any other options come up. It's just been extremely hard to find a large facility that is zoned appropriately to provide these services there, because it's just, yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from, and I think everybody agrees it's not the ideal scenario to split them up. But
Matt, I just have this comment. I know we're out of time, but I'm going to throw this out there. It's something totally out of the box, but what we're discussing creating right now is actually already existing, like half a mile away at Lourdes, and they have roughly, they have a crisis stabilization unit that they're not even using. They have an inpatient unit that is holding about 8 or 9 people, but they could hold 20. Have we thought about at all in the interim while we're working on developing this, that using some funds to supplement Lourdes in getting staffing so that we could use those facilities? Because that's a huge resource that this community has that we're not using and not able to use. And we're talking about spending millions of dollars to create something that's exactly the same as what we are.
Have a know the true no wrong door. Matt and Jason and I were part of the group that went down to Arizona. Facilities down there. And the facilities down there, the programs that they have are really, you know, high level programs. And it is a true no wrong door. Law enforcement brings them in, and they accept the person. They have a 10-minute drop off. My experience here in this community for decades is that I think to a degree, to achieve what we need, there needs to be a shift in how we perceive these things.
I agree. I agree with you that I definitely think we should continue where we're going and build this, but it's just very unfortunate that we have a resource here that, like Sheriff Raymond was talking about, we can't get anyone in, so they go to jail. Is there nothing that we could do between all the commissioners and all of the money that we have in this community to help use that, utilize the facility that, you know, we've paid millions of dollars to develop and create? I don't know. It's just throwing it out there for us to maybe talk about in the future.
The state money that Benton County has received to build and create this recovery center does stipulate that it cannot go to a for-profit corporation. So that money can't be used. Right. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And so
it would have to be local.
So it would have to be, yeah, another pool of money.
To answer your question, I don't think that conversation has occurred. At least I'm not aware of that conversation.
And it may absolutely not be something that we can do, but, you know, we do talking about building a resource that we already have in our community and can't use. So, and we all know this.
I'm perfectly willing to talk to our commissioners and see if that's something they would like us to explore.
And I guess that's one of the things that's just been so frustrating for me personally over the years. We do have a provider here, and yes, on paper, all those services are being provided. But we have way too many people here in our community that suffer because they don't have access to them. Our members of law enforcement are suffering because they have nowhere to take those individuals. I've heard a wide variety of opinions, excuses, what have you, over the decade that I've been here doing this. It's just, I'm glad to see this group finally come together, because it's definitely time for change and to move forward.
Yeah, we are way past the time, and I do want to be respectful of everybody's time. It's Friday afternoon and it's big week. There is nothing else that anybody wants to add. I believe we adjourn the meeting.
When are we meeting again?
We're going to send out a poll. Keith and I will send out a meeting poll to start setting up. Kind of leading towards month, I think, probably starting out monthly. And I wonder if this is early on, we play a little catch up, or I play a little catch up. It's maybe that 90 or 120 day, when it's even better.
I did that.
The schedule is for. We can always schedule a little longer and. That's right. Rather get.
That's right.
That's right.